It's not about the number of things you do as much as it is about the quality of perhaps a few things you do very well.
And the interactions that you have with the people that you've enrolled, whether that be an associate, an employee, an advisor, whatever your organizational makeup looks like. I actually, in the conversation that I had with Jordan Peace, he and I were discussing this concept, right, of when you're starting an organization, you hire those first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people, and you really want them to be aligned with the core values that you've established for your organization. And then you really just need to duplicate those individuals. If they are, right, again, aligned, as we've discussed in the past and tying this back to EOS as well, but right people, right seat, you really want to make sure that they're a good fit for your organization. And then there will almost be like copies of those individuals if you are starting out. So it's important that you are intentional from the very beginning, and the fact that being very present in those interactions with those first few individuals that you're enrolling into your dialogue is extremely important.
Yeah. And again, that intentionality as a leader early in the journey is deciding what you do value as an organization.
Yeah.
And that as a leader is, you know, your imperative responsibility, opportunity, whatever word you want to use to describe it, but it's your decision, because that is going to then ultimately inform, if you haven't been intentional and now you are, the first thing you've got to look at once you've made that decision of this is what we're going to stand for, this is what we value, or this is what our values are, is do the people you have on your team align with that? Do they reflect that? And again, that is early in my journey of trying to figure this out, even when I hadn't made a decision to be intentional. So we're going way back. Sometimes you know what your internal compass is and your internal value structure is. You've tried to impress that upon your business as a leader, but it becomes very clear who the people on your team are that are aligned with that and aren't.
Right.
And that becomes kind of the first step, is to your point about replicating, you do need to have people on your team that represent what you say is important and what you value. And that's not always easy, because you could have a very talented individual on your team that contributes to the business that in fact is total counterculture to you, what you said is important. You could conversely have somebody that is very much aligned with the culture, but is, you know, they struggle to get their job done or make a contribution in the business. And so it's not just as simple as saying, oh, their values align with the organization. They have to be somebody that also gets the job done. This isn't all about just a feel-good thing. This is about...
Right. You are running a business.
Yeah, getting results. Getting right. Results is obvious.
I think when we talk about the employee care, listening to your employees is huge. And it's not just about this very... what would you call it? Like really formal, sit down at the desk and tell me what's on your mind. But, you know, those ins and outs at the coffee pot and whatever the Keurig, whatever you have, what's going on? How are things going? And really listening to what's going on in your employee's life. I mean, that's the hardship. When I've talked to companies, it's not generally the day-to-day at work that is the weighted on their shoulder moments. It's the things that are going on at home that are really taking so much of their attention and energy. And so just seeing how you can be a carer of your team and what are the things that could benefit them? Because it's not a one size fit all, obviously, and different levels and sizes of companies are going to have different needs. But it's just finding out how to best care and encourage and support your employees. And I think that anybody who really has a company and has people work for them really wants and desires to care for their team, or I would hope that they would. You know, those are the things, just finding ways to be, you know, and I speak in terms of blessing. So be a way to bless the people that you are in leadership over. And I think that's kind of an important step for any leader.
But what would be the key things you would say for someone who's starting to intentionally focus on their culture? What should they focus on?
You know, I'll answer this kind of like how I would run the business journal in that regard. You know, especially with less employees, it's a lot easier, obviously. But I mean, at the end of the day, it starts with that communication, just upfront, straightforward communication, meaning if I have my team, you know, let's have a discussion. I want to have a discussion with every single body, you know, everybody, and just be like, hey, what do you think the culture is? Mm-hmm. What do you want? Like, what's going to make you happy? I hate to use the Simon Sinek thing, but what is your why? What drives you? And then what do you want out of the organization? What do you need from me? And let's have that more open conversation. Let's meet. If we need to meet in the middle, let's meet in the middle. But at the end of the day, just making everyone feel involved. And again, larger organizations, it's a little bit tougher. But that's where you have that, you know, the middle management, the managers that have maybe 30 or 40 people under them. But then it's truly just having that authentic communication. Because what I see, the companies that struggle the most, and it's, it happens with everyone because it's tough, is that internal communication. Mm-hmm. How are we communicating the changes that are going to be made? How we communicate it to everyone? Does people need to have an input? I know some decisions have to be made. They just have to be made. But if you think about it from an overall company standpoint, from the culture standpoint, that's where I think you need to have everyone involved. Everyone needs at least a say-so or a chance to have that say-so. And that's just going to keep everyone engaged. Because if I say something to my C-level executives here in the Charlotte office, that's going to be heard, it makes you want to speak up even more. You know, it's like, okay, well, that's great. I'm glad you hear me. What can I do to continue for you to trust me? So my input does matter. So I know communication is a very cliche answer, but it's the most important piece.
Develop effective leaders. I think the main thing that people need to focus on is being able to develop their communication style, not only written, but more so verbal. Mm-hmm. How many times have you been sitting on a conference call and the person presenting is, well, today we have it's distracting. And the message that they're trying to get across gets lost. And a lot of the times the people don't even realize that they're doing it. But one of the most rewarding things for me is to see individuals who struggle with speaking that have that opportunity to step out of their comfort zone and notice that, hey, I think that I can be a more effective leader by being able to communicate my message and my why to the individuals that report to me. So I want to step out and I want to learn how to make myself a better speaker. And through that, I believe that not only are you able to influence people better, but you're also able to get your message across to those that really need to hear it.
Well, we've took the idea one step further. And that step further, which again, may or may not be appropriate for some businesses, to talk to their clients, their customers. And for us, our clients are our advisors. So let's talk a little bit, Amanda, about how this same concept can be taken to a client-customer relationship.
Absolutely. So when you start to engage from a client relationship standpoint, when it comes down to your culture, it's really about what value they see in your organization. So how are they taking the tools and resources that are provided to them and then making those accessible for the growth of whether it's their practice or just their professional development, whatever that might look like. And so in the construct of taking it to your clients, we had an opportunity to really dig a little bit deeper again about the value that they felt the organization brought to them, what they are most excited and engaged about in having a business partner, i.e. the firm in this situation. And then we were able to have really great dialogue about how we effectively communicate and engage with them. And it was some of the most fruitful discussion I think I've had in a long time in a very structured way. You know, there is this accessibility component that you definitely need to make sure is there. And when you talk about having culture conversations or dialogues with your clients, you are going to hear, again, as we kind of shared, you're going to hear what is going well, what is not going so well, and then ultimately how you can move your organization forward and support them. So I think one of the really cool things that came from how we transitioned those questions to a more client-facing opportunity was that engagement component, what they most look forward to in a business partner.
What do you see and define as a healthy organization or company or culture?
Well, I define it first by looking at the leadership team. It all stems from there. A healthy culture and company and workspace is going to have a healthy leadership team that's willing to be open, honest, vulnerable with each other. They have a high level of trust. They're willing to say what needs to be said, even if it's uncomfortable in the short term. And they have spirited discussions, debate about key issues. And then at the end of the day, they're willing to commit something and then be accountable for whatever that decision is. That's the basis of a really healthy organization. It's also what I see is great leaders and managers throughout the organization. So those that do have direct reports, they really support them with great leadership and great management. And they just create a culture of accountability and they lead by example.
When you think about like the future of benefits mm-hmm. and really where you're going and where you see, you know, you could potentially take Fringe, is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah. For one, I think the world is shifting from a standpoint of there used to be this paradigm of there's full-time and there's part-time. And those lines, I think, are going to get continuously more blurred, right? There's yes. more gig work alongside. And I also run my own company from home. And I, you know, mm-hmm. like, everybody's got like two or three side gigs. Like that is, you just see that happening more and more and more. And so I think even the concept of benefits as something that only is applicable to a full-time employee, that probably is going to need to shift, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know exactly what that looks like. And I think too, the personalization aspect. Now Fringe, of course, kind of, it's all personalization, but that is just lifestyle benefits. It's in its own category for the moment. I think that personalization is going to begin to spread across traditional benefits as well, to the point where someday in the not so distant future, instead of saying, here's your health, here's your life, here's your 401k, et cetera, it's here's your 15 grand a year for you to choose where it goes on benefits. You can choose health and 401k and Fringe. You could choose not health because you get it through your spouse and you get a whole lot of Fringe and the best life insurance plan in the world, right? Like you choose, right? I think that back in the day, it was called the cafeteria model, but I refer to it as the Starbucks model now because that's what we grew up with, right?
Right, like exactly.
Choosing exactly that like 17 word description of the perfect drink. I think that's where benefits are, right? I mean,
yeah.
it's
oh,
extra
so
whip and this is like, I mean, it's ridiculous, but that's what we know as consumers. And if the workplace doesn't catch up with the marketplace, people are going to lose interest. Like you got to keep up with this consumerism, this personalization, customization. Like that's what our generation and younger, that's all we know.
Well, and I think it's also to the accessibility of it. So mm-hmm. it is tangible. And I know I've used that word a couple of times, but it's yes. tangible in a very different way than for me, my parents going through their collegiate career. And then also, of course, actually being in the workforce,
right.
just the benefit offering was very different. And it was those intangible things that ultimately resulted in making sure that, you know, you had coverage is what mm-hmm. I'll call it in some mm-hmm. way, shape or form. But now it's this, we constantly are being pinged and push notifications and all these right. different things. And so it's the accessibility to say, okay, this works for my life right now. It might not in 5 years and that's okay. And yeah. I have the ability to change that. I have that selection power almost mm-hmm. versus it just saying, okay, here are the five things that you get for being part of this organization, which yeah. I think is very, very intriguing, especially the conversation mm-hmm. of the part-time versus full-time and what does that look like? And where is that kind of threshold of, okay, you are a full employee of said organization and here's yeah. what you can pick from. As you said, right. that kind of cafeteria style Starbucks. Right. I like that reference a
I'm
lot.
I'm just trying to update it. Yeah.
yeah. You can have your drink and all the 17 ingredients that go along with that. Right. And you can actually like preset it and you just hit a button
yeah.
when you're ready to order it, which I think is just insane. We've grown so much in the right. accessibility component of how we consume things in life.